If it please the court, I'd like to thank the court for expediting oral argument in this matter. Time is important. We need to have this issue resolved before the next hunting season, although that's in September, October, November. This case is about the importation of trophy antlered whitetail deer for destination hunts costing between $4,000 and $40,000 per deer taken. There are two clear issues for the court to examine. The first is the authority of the Conservation Commission pursuant to Constitutional Amendment Article 4, Section 40, to regulate game and wildlife resources of the state. There is a second independent source of authority for the Constitution or for the Conservation Commission. That's Section 252.030 and 252.040. The Constitution was amended in 1936 to create a Conservation Commission. In that amendment, it empowered the Commission to control and regulate, among other things, game and all wildlife resources of the state, as well as property used for those purposes. In 1945, the legislature passed a series of statutes concerning the Department of Conservation. There it gave to the Department of Conservation jurisdiction over wildlife, that's in 252.020, and wildlife was defined inclusively as all wild birds, mammals, and all other wild animals, regardless of classification, imported, and every part of individual species of wildlife. The imported language in that statute and a number of other statutes is very important, because nothing would be imported absent ownership or possession or control by some other private entity. 252.030 then goes on to say ownership of and title to all wildlife of and within the state declared to be in the state is declared to be in the state of Missouri. Any person who possesses any such wildlife shall be deemed to consent that the title of said wildlife shall be and remain in the state of Missouri for the purpose of control, management, restoration, conservation, and regulation thereof. It's a position of the Conservation Commission and the Department of Conservation that the Constitution, the will of the people directly, and this statute, the will of the people indirectly through the legislature, empowers it to regulate white-tailed deer. Now, why are they doing that? What is the problem here? The Conservation Commission, why do we even have this lawsuit? The Conservation Commission has regulated big game hunting preserves since 1973. It has allowed hunting of white-tailed deer since 1985. But in 2014, it promulgated regulations to prohibit the importation of white-tailed deer to fight the spread of a disease called chronic wasting disease, CWD. CWD is similar to scrapie in sheep, mad cow disease in cow, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in humans. It is a disease of the brain and spinal cord. It is always fatal. It has an 18-month incubation period. It is highly infectious. There is no live test for it. It has ravaged herds in Colorado, Wyoming, Wisconsin, and northern Illinois. I have some booklets, if I could have the marshal distribute them to them. And on the last item in there, most of these are statutes in the constitutional provisions, so you'll have the language to look at either during argument or afterwards. But the last is the most recent I think you'd call it scholarly article by the Journal of American Veterinary Medical Association about CWD. And that article was published in August of 2017. It's cited in our briefs, but it's not in the record. I would also talk to you to show you the seriousness of this disease. One of the problems is it's passed by the saliva or fluids of deer to deer and deer to deer contact. That saliva or fluids also can infect the ground. The ground is then infected and passes it on. The particular problem about importation is that a deer will normally roam for a radius of 25 miles in the deer's lifetime, 25 miles. So the main movement of deer in the United States is not by deer movement, it's by human movement of deer, taking deer from one place to another in trucks or carcasses after hunting has been accomplished. If you look at that last exhibit from JAMA in your book, there's a map by the, it's on the third page in, by the United States Geological Service that's tracking CWD. And you will see where CWD is in the United States. You will see the small yellow and red dots. Those are captive facilities. The scholarship, all the recognized scholarship says deer are moved by humans, and they're particularly moved by captive facilities where a hunter will come to the facility. Most people won't pay $40,000 to kill one deer. But they will if it has just the particular antler characteristics they want. And so they come to the hunting lodge owner. The hunting lodge owner, these people work hard. They're good business people. They run a national search for a deer that has antlers just like that for your family room. They'll pay a lot of money for that deer. They'll bring it to Missouri, keep it for about 2 weeks. They don't want to have it here too long, because it will injure itself or die. And then the deer will be harvested by the hunter and go home to his ranch. That's how deer are moved. And that's the biggest fear of CWD being moved into places that don't have it. CWD in Missouri. The question in Missouri, where did it first come from? Where was it found? It was first found on hunting lodge premises. It was in Linn County. Another hunting preserve owned by the same person in Macon County, it was also found there. Up until from 2001 to 2009, Missouri had tested 26,000 deer, no CWD hits. In 2010, the first hit was at a captive facility. There's only one thing you do with CWD. You have to depopulate, kill everything in sight that's a deer. So they killed 356 deer on this premises. They found 11. One out of 35. Remember that relationship. One out of 35 on that facility. We brought a witness to court, Mr. John Miller, who said during the depopulation, or right before depopulation occurred, he witnessed a deer escape from that very facility. That very facility. And then we had a spreading. Now, we can't prove cause and effect, but that's what the evidence is, that he witnessed it, and that's where it spread, the first free-ranging deer in the place. Here's how it progressed in Missouri. Up until the time of trial, 2014-15, we had discovered 33 more deer with this horrible disease. It was mostly concentrated around where those captive facilities were. Now, this is outside of the record, but you can find it on the Conservation Commission website, a governmental website. The numbers increased to the end of 2013. There were 42, from 33 to 42. This hunting season, those numbers have increased. We now have 57 deer in Missouri. The only way to control this disease is to keep it from being established. we can't do anything about the deer in the state already, but we want to, the Conservation Commission, in its judgment, the judgment the people of Missouri empowered it to exercise, wants to prevent bringing in any more deer for that threat. The main argument, there are three arguments that the respondents make to why we shouldn't be allowed to regulate their deer. The first is they're not wildlife or they're not game. Well, I think those are just facially problematic arguments, considering that they're holding out these animals for live hunts. You don't hold out traditional domestic farm animals, cattle, pigs, sheep for $40,000 hunts. That just doesn't work. There is a video in your packet that I presented. It's exhibit FFF at trial. It is the promotional video of Mr. Hill showing his deer. Take one look at that if you're considering whether or not these are wild or game. Their other main argument is that these are not resources of the state. They are privately owned. I suggest that that argument is just as misguided. The Constitution is to be read in the way the ordinary Missouri person, the common person, would commonly understand that language. When we use the term resources of the state, that's a common term referred to anything of value within the state. It didn't say owned by the state, titled in the state. It said resources of the state. Think, we regularly talk about the mineral resources of Missouri, the agricultural resources of Missouri, the forestry resources of Missouri, the cultural, human resources of Missouri, without regard to who owns them. No one would suggest that Drury, William Jewell, Washington University, aren't educational resources of the state of Missouri just because they're not owned by Missouri. Nobody would suggest that our museums, our great museums and art galleries, aren't cultural resources of the state of Missouri just because the state doesn't own them. No one would suggest that the Lake of the Ozarks isn't a resource of the state of Missouri just because it's owned by Ameren. If you would look at the Department of Natural Resources website, it shows the mineral resources of the state, and it shows it by pictures of privately owned mines. That is the common usage. I see my time's up. I'll need to talk about the right to farm amendment later when I come back.
Thank you, Counselor.
Good morning. May it please the court. I thought that, having been through a couple of these arguments now in the Eastern District and then the Circuit Court, a good place to start might be to talk about the deer in question. And counsel for the commission has talked a little about the deer, and as they have continued to do, emphasize the cost of the deer. I would suggest to you that's irrelevant here.
Well, if your argument is accepted that these aren't game and aren't wildlife, then yes, how's that distinguished from the purchase of bobwhite quail or pheasant or chukar or any of those other types of things? As long as you can buy it somewhere else, it's not wildlife or game. How could the commission even regulate those types of operations, which they have forever?
I think there's a distinction between, I want to, and it feeds, thank you for asking that question, because it feeds into exactly what I was going to say, which is the nature of these deer. We're not talking about animals that have been captured and converted to private use. These deer have been bred just like you would breed cattle, hogs, right, any other kind
or
of animal.
Or you would incubate quail like you incubated chickens.
If you had, over time, owned those animals and their progeny. I mean, we're talking about generations and generations. How would we do it with respect to hogs? I mean, hogs can be feral and out there. Turkeys can be feral and hunted. And turkey season, obviously, is a very popular thing the way hunting season is. But we wouldn't allow the Department of Conservation to come into a turkey facility in southwest Missouri or a hog farm in north Missouri and say, well, you know, we're going to allow you to regulate these animals because we recognize those are within the jurisdiction of the Missouri Department of Agriculture, the jurisdiction of the United States Department of Agriculture, and that's exactly what we're talking about with these deer. These are deer that have been raised no differently than those other animals. They've
been bred. Let's talk about cows. Cows don't necessarily run wild, but this department would not have any authority over cows where there would be a herd with mad cow disease.
Under the argument that the Conservation Commission is making, no, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. Their argument is that anything that constitutes a threat to the well-being of the wildlife of the state is in fact something that they have regulatory power because they say they have control or they have responsibility for their welfare. And taken to its logical conclusion, that presents no restriction on that power other than that which they choose to self-impose. For the first time in the briefing in this court, they suggest, oh, that's silly, we wouldn't do that because we're just talking about things that are traditional animals. I would suggest there's nothing in that argument that would restrict them from doing that. And I go back to turkeys as a really good example. We've seen the kinds of diseases that get into avian animals. And let's say you have a disease that presents a threat because it could be passed to the wild turkey population. They could, under their argument, they could come in and regulate that. They could do it with hogs. They could do it with mad cow. The interesting thing is, and there was testimony of this at trial, the interesting thing is that no one really knows where CWB came from. We know where they first discovered, which was at a research facility in Colorado. But the most dominant thought is that it mutated or evolved from scrapie and sheep, because there had been sheep at that facility. I asked one of the experts that the Conservation Commission, I asked him at the trial, I said, well, could that happen again? As we look at why you have outbreaks in places where there seems to be no reason for it, could you have that? And he acknowledged that, yes, he thought you could. So, what does that mean for the sheep industry?
But
I know sheep farmers have historically not been real popular, but, you know, they do run a business.
But sheep and cattle and hogs, the domesticated kinds, are regulated by the Department of Agriculture.
And these deer are regulated by the Department of Agriculture. These deer are required to report to the Department of Agriculture mortalities. They're required by the Department of Agriculture to report disease. They're regulated under the Missouri Livestock Disease and Eradication Act. I think I'm getting that name right. They are regulated as livestock by the Department Missouri Department of Agriculture, and we do not disagree with that. We've enjoyed a very good relationship with the state veterinarian who resides in the Department of Agriculture. We've enjoyed a very good relationship there. We report all disease mortalities. The importation that they talk about and they don't want to see happen is regulated already and was regulated at the time of this. The United States Department of Agriculture has established a program that is a low-risk CWD program. So they look at deer herds and elk and other, they have similar programs, but they look at white-tailed deer herds around the country. And what we're seeing now is much more testing in the wild. Captive facilities has always had a much higher testing rate and required to test a certain percentage of mortalities. They have to in Missouri, you have to report every mortality of an imported deer. You have to report it and test it for CWD. So the testing levels, you wonder why was CWD first found in a captive facility? Because they test a lot more. I would suggest 20,000 tests over 8 years is not very many when you look at the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of deer that are taken in Missouri every year. In this last year, just 2 days ago, the Missouri Department of Conservation reported that now they've increased their testing. They tested 18,400 wild deer and found 15 positives. We've heard the parade of horribles from the day this case was filed up to today about CWD. First of all, I would direct the court that none of the findings of fact in this case were challenged. So let's start with the findings of fact. When you look at what the evidence was, the rate continues, even what they found here, less than 0.1%. EHD, sometimes called blue tongue, killed over 10,000 deer alone. We're talking about less than 100, 15 in the last year. that tested positive. The idea, the finding of fact is that no one knows how it started in Missouri. Yes, it was found first in the place that, you know, if you test more, you're probably going to be more likely to find it there. It was found there, yes, but no one can say that it started outside the fence or inside the fence. There is no evidence of that. And they can say they saw a deer escape, but the same thing, Your Honor, is that the incubation period for CWD is rather lengthy. There's no way that that deer went out, infected somebody, and all of a sudden we had an outbreak. The disease doesn't work that way. The law makes sense. I look that most of us are older lawyers at this point in our careers, and probably at some point, and I made this argument in the Eastern District, so Judge Price has heard me say this before. We all were asked by some older lawyer, and we wondered what the heck he was talking about or she was talking about. I know there's a case out there that says such and such. And we looked at ourselves and thought, is he crazy? And I remember asking my dad once, why do you guys keep asking us these questions? And he said, well, because after you practice the law, you understand the law makes sense. And after you've seen it enough, you can feel in your gut when the law makes sense. Well, why does Section 40, why does 252.030, why do they have the language they have? And I'll get to that in just a minute. The idea of wildlife and that they belong to the state goes back to England. It goes back to the idea that the king owned these animals. No individual citizen owned these animals. And it follows through to us where we say, you know, that deer that's out there, that squirrel that's out there, any sort of living creature that's running around, it doesn't belong to me. It doesn't belong to any of you all. It belongs to us collectively. And so what do we do? How do we govern or regulate those resources that belong to all of us? That's what we look to government to do. But we don't do that with private property. And we don't allow people to just grab a squirrel and say, this is my squirrel now, and you can't do anything about it, because I've now taken from all my fellow citizens something that belonged to them. We're not talking about animals like that. And when you look at Section 40, which talks about, and there's a rather lengthy grammatical analysis of that section in our brief, which I give credit to Ms. Stevens for, and I can't do it justice as she talks about articles and all this and how they fit. But when you read it, like so many times, if you take certain words out, does it make sense? When they say the control, management, restoration, et cetera, of the bird, fish, game, forestry, and all wildlife resources of the state, first of all, resources doesn't stand by itself. Resources is clearly referring to those other things, but the specific the that's used means you're talking about these resources. Didn't say any. It didn't say the regulation of bird, fish. It said the bird, fish, resources of the state. And if you look at 232.030, where they say ownership and title of all wildlife of and within the state, not or, of and within the state. Of the state makes sense when you read it as these are things that belong to the state. That's what we give Conservation Commission power over. We don't give Conservation Commission power to do whatever they want to do with private resources. And I would suggest that up until this case, that has always been the way they really approach things. And it's talked about in our...
If you take possession of a squirrel, it doesn't stop being wildlife.
Correct.
How many generations do you have to hold it until you say it stops being wildlife?
Well, I would acknowledge that's a good question. Of course, we don't know what state these deer ever started in. I think at some point, taking that to its logical conclusion, any sort of bred animal, I mean, you can trace almost every species back to something that was wild at one time or another. But I think at this point where they have been bred, they're required by law to be bred in captivity, live in captivity, and die in captivity. The law prohibits just letting captive animals go run with the wildlife. And in fact, when you create...
Well, how is that... The one thing I don't... How does your argument apply, or why doesn't it apply to these bobwhite quail and pheasant game preserves or hobby permits that people buy? Because that's I can't, you know, they've been regulated forever. That doesn't make it right. But I want to know the distinction, because they aren't domesticated. They're raised for purposes in these fly pens so that they fly like wild, they look like wild. What's the difference?
Well, I'd say
then one has hooves and the other has wings.
It's I think there's a problem with those. I think that is a real issue. I would say birds are a little different than anything else, because unless you're going to put them in something that keeps them where they are, they can, you know, there's no fence, there's no nothing you can create sort of short of a sphere of some kind that's going to ensure they stay there. But part of the argument from the Department of Conservation has been, you know, we've always regulated these animals and therefore we should be allowed to do so. And that's not a good argument. It's when we expect people, you take my clients are not sophisticated people. And they're not people with, they may, you know, Mr. Hill, and the record will reflect this, Mr. Hill has a rather largeable loan, just like many other small business owners does. It's built on a business model that the state sanctioned. Given what the Conservation Commission wants to do, the findings of fact in this case and the evidence was that it will put him out of business. So when we take someone like that and say, that's okay, you've been doing what we required you to do, but we're going to now put you out of business through this interpretation, I don't think it matters how long. He didn't sit back when he got in this business and say, you know, I don't think the Missouri Department of Conservation has authority to regulate this. He's a layperson. It's not until the fact that they went along with conservation while they were being reasonable doesn't suggest that conservation had authority. It just means that they didn't have reason to go out and challenge it or even think about the question of, is this right? They're not lawyers. And I would suggest, coming back to the Department of Conservation, has the same issue. When Mr. Hill created his preserve, which is in excess of 1,000 acres for people to go hunt on, one of the requirements was conservation said, okay, you have to exclude all of the hoofed wildlife of the state. That's their words, not ours. They require that in their regulations. So what they do is they fence it all, leave an opening, and they start with a bunch of people, and you move all the hoofed wildlife, all the wildlife out. Why? Because you're taking the state's property out, but they're allowing to put your property in. If you're excluding all of the hoofed wildlife of the state, and those deer that are in there are wildlife of the state, the captive deer, then they should leave too.
Aren't you mixing the questions, really? Whether or not they have the authority, and then whether the regulations are reasonable? Aren't you mixing the questions? Whether or not they have the authority is really different than whether or not the regulations are reasonable.
I think those are two separate questions. I think those are two separate questions. I think you start with the idea that they don't have authority, but even if they did in some way, the regulations weren't reasonable. And some of that is challenged under the Right to Farm Act, which is a wholly separate part of that. If I could mention one other time that the conservation, and it is mentioned in our brief, but I think it's an important point for all of us that have done work in criminal cases. The Missouri Department of Conservation took the position in a criminal case, which they have done in others, in a probable cause statement where they said, thank you, where they said, these private deer belong to these owners and are domesticated animals that belong to them, for purposes of charging someone, a third party, from coming and poaching deer from there so that they could proceed under a particular statute. And the head of the Protection Division for the Department of Conservation said, we've done this in other cases. I would suggest to you, if that's the position of the Department of Conservation in a case where someone's liberty is at stake, and now they want to say, no, that's not really the position we take, I would suggest that's dangerous, because they're choosing based upon what suits their purpose at any particular time. I think the law is bigger than that. I think these animals are clearly belong to the owners and are regulated by the Department of Agriculture. Thank you. I apologize for going over.
Thank you.
Forgive me, I'm going to have to speak very quickly. Mr. Bradshaw is absolutely correct that the number of CWD animals found in Missouri's free-ranging herd so far is that one, every testing turns out to be one out of every 100,000. But remember what the number were in the captive facility that I asked you about, one out of 35. That's the danger of captive facilities that concentrate numbers. If you will look, the expert testimony in this case is that the herds in Colorado and Wyoming are facing extinction. in 41 years because the disease has been allowed to establish itself there. That's the problem we're fighting. Whether or not the Department of Agriculture also regulates these deer is irrelevant. Many things are subject to two regulatory authorities. Department of Agriculture looks at farming issues. Conservation is to preserve Missouri's wildlife. So prized by the people of Missouri, it was enacted into the Constitution. Look at Article 444. It says nothing can be done inconsistent. No laws can be passed inconsistent with the power granted to the Conservation Commission. Very, very broad. I would also like you to note that in all of respondents' briefing, they never once mention the independent authority of 252.030.040. Never mention it in their briefs. You didn't hear it today. Why? Because it's absolutely clear that 252.030 maintains that anybody who has title to wildlife in the state of Missouri for purpose consents to title being in Missouri for purposes of control, management, restitution, conservation, and regulation. Two sources of authority, the statute and the Constitution. You know, the fact that this is in ag kind of ties right into the right to farm amendment. Running big game hunting preserves is no more traditional farming in Missouri than growing marijuana in your basement. You took care of that in the Shanklin case, and the answer is just the same here. You also looked at that in the Dost v. Peasley case in 1954 when you said for farm labor. We're talking about what's traditionally associated with farming in Missouri. And what is traditionally associated with farming in Missouri is those things. If you look at our statutes, there are the two statutes in there that define farming corporation. Farming is defined as what is a traditional agricultural product, food. Deer can't be sold for food in Missouri. It is not an it's not cotton, it can't be woven, it's not used, it's just not an agricultural product. I totally agree that you ought to look at the case law and consider the solid case law. The two cases I think you really need to look at is Weber, who dealt with this very same issue at the turn of the century and said once wild, always wild. The Taylor case, it talks about resources of the state. And then I'm going to just say, please look at the regulations themselves. There are two regulations here. 1, 3 CSR 10, 9, 353. That deals with breeding facilities. The other, 3 CSR 10, 9, 565. That's hunting preserves. Hunting preserves don't even get close to farming, in my judgment. If you even want to think about breeding, the breeding's only for hunting. The testimony in the record is all of the deer on these places ultimately end up on the hunting preserve after they're not good for breeding anymore and are shot for profit. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a well-argued case by both sides. We'll hear from